What's good, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily. I'm Andrea Renee, and joining me is the Rogue One, Gary Whitta.
I don't know if you've been doing this for a while or if I'm just now noticing it, but I just noticed that you start with what's good. You get your little branding in there right away. That's very clever.
I do, yeah.
Instead of what's up, it's what's good.
It's true.
I like that. Did you just start that, or have you been doing that for a while?
No, it's been that way for quite some time.
I'm just now noticing. I'm nothing if not slow on the uptake. But thank you. I'm happy to be here alongside you.
Me too, Gary. It's been a long time since we've hosted together.
It's been a while.
I think we've only done, maybe 4 or 5 shows together
total? We've done a few. It's only ever really happens when the office, as it is right now, is totally cleared out and they need all the extra help they can get. They have to put us together.
Otherwise, you get stuck with Fran.
I think people like it when we host together. I think we're a good combo.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm indifferent about it, but, I think the viewers like it.
I'm indifferent about it.
You know what? I shouldn't do that. I have this, it's part of my brand that I'm kind of addicted to people on camera. I should really just stick to Greg. I feel like Greg is the only one that really deserves that kind of contempt, though.
Thank you.
You and Tim and Fran and the other people I host with, they're all delightful, so I'll try to be nicer.
I appreciate it.
Okay,
that.
All right, good.
If you didn't know, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here at twitch.tv/kindoffunny. Games, we bring you the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, you can subscribe at youtube.com/whatsgoodgames. Oops, Freudian slip. youtube.com/kindoffunnygames.
Dial it back. That's too much.
Or you can subscribe to Kind of Funny Games Daily on podcast services around the globe. Don't forget, if you guys are watching live at twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we need you to help keep us honest, especially since Gary is here. That means you need to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and let us know what we screwed up as we screwed it up. And, of course, if you guys want to be part of the show, we want to hear from you, your questions, your PSN names, maybe your Xbox IDs or your Steam or Epic Game Store tags. If you are looking to squad up, you can go ahead to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members and above get to write in, and silver members or above get the ad-free show. So we're going to be talking about a couple of different things today. We've got some news on NPD sales numbers for the month of April. There's a rumor about a Half-Life 2 remake. What's that about?
And you got my attention.
And we're going to say goodbye to the Ouya. So before we get into the news, we've got some housekeeping. Greg and Tim, as we mentioned, are not here because they're in Florida. So they're there for the Full Sail Hall of Fame. You can see them tonight at their on-campus meet and greet. That's Wednesday at 1 p.m., which I believe is right now, right? On the East Coast?
East Coast time, yeah. It's 1:06 p.m. Yeah, right now. It's happening right now.
So if you're in Florida and you're watching us, pull up Twitch on your phone and head on over to Building 3EB Lobby. That is the Full Sail Hall of Fame meet and greet. But then later on tonight, there's going to be an open to the public meet and greet. And I forgot to put those details in the show notes once again.
Whoa,
Kevin, if you can pull those up for me, that would be excellent.
How would I find that?
You would find that on Greg's Twitter. That's at Game Over Greggy. He does the Twitter thing quite frequently.
So the main meetup is tonight.
the open to the public, yes. The meet and greet this afternoon is only open to Full Sail students and staff. But the one tonight is open to everybody. I believe it is an all ages event because Greg was talking about Tombstone.
Yeah, he was going to pile
drive somebody's
some
kid.
Poor kid. Yeah,
some 10-year-old kid is going to have a really rough day
there we
today.
Go. 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. all ages.
That's Florida time, right?
At Deadly Sins Brewery, which is at 750 Jackson Avenue in Winter Park, Florida.
God, there you go.
Why does he take his shirt off so much?
Well, he can't help himself.
Yeah, he's...
Does he actually think people want to see that?
No, I think he's just simple-minded and, this
yeah.
he knows is funny.
He just wants to free his nipples, you know? Just wants to, eliminate the chafing from the t-shirt. We all get it. All right, moving on from that housekeeping. Speaking of meet and greets, I'm going to be in London with the What's Good crew this weekend on Sunday, May 26th.
Oh, cool.
At the Marquee of Westminster from 3 to 6 p.m. If you guys are in the London or UK area and you're interested, I've heard there's going to be a rollout of Kind of Funny Best Friends that are going to be there as well. So
what's
it's very
taking
exciting.
You to London?
The Spice Girls reunion tour.
Oh, seriously? You're going to go see it there?
Yeah.
Are they not coming? They've got to be coming
not,
here.
No, they're only doing dates in the UK and in Ireland. That's it.
Oh, that's it's not like a world tour or anything?
No, they call it a world tour, but they're not. And
but
I'm
you're hardcore enough that you're going to go. You're going to travel halfway across the world to see them.
Listen, when you've had too many drinks and you're hanging out with Brit and Steimer, sometimes you buy tickets to Spice Girls in Manchester. It happens.
Oh, man, that's going to be off the hook. Have you ever seen them live?
No.
This is your first time?
My first
seeing
time.
Them?
Wait, hold on. Have you ever seen them live, Gary?
I'm old enough to have done. I mean, I remember buying their first album when it first came out. I lived in the UK when they first, you know, became a thing, and it was a big sensation.
I have all their albums, even the one where Jerry was like, peace, I gotta do my own thing. I have her solo album, too. All great.
Now, they're not all back, are they?
No.
Posh is a holdout.
Posh said no thanks.
Does that take anything out of it for you?
No.
Is that a bit of a bummer? Does she
Honestly,
think she's
she
above
was
it?
The is weakest link, let's be honest.
She doesn't, but she's the one that also needs it the least, right? All of you can imagine that all of them could probably use the money apart from Posh.
Well,
don't you think?
I mean, no, they're all pretty successful.
But Posh is, but in terms of like who needs the money the least, it's got to be Posh, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, needs the money the least, but they're not doing it for the money.
Why do you think, has she spoken about why she chose not to participate?
I believe she put out an official statement, but I don't know what it is.
It's a bummer, but she was never your favorite anyway.
Oh, no.
Who's your, I want to see if we have the same favorite. Who's your favorite?
Ginger. Jerry Halliwell was my fave.
Yeah. I like Jerry. My favorite was always Sporty. I like Sporty Spice.
Yeah.
I always felt like I just personally liked her, but I always felt like she was the one that people seem to, when you people talk about Spice Girls, she's the one that people least think of. Although she was like the most overlooked one, but I always liked her.
Oh,
she always seemed like she was having the most fun.
Yeah,
like doing
she was
the karate
great.
Kicks and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I liked her a lot too. All right, Gary. We have to thank our Patreon producers, Blackjack, Tombach, and Muhammad. And today we're brought to you by Quip and Third Love, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. We've got four items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. All right, first up, we've got NPD numbers for the month of April, and Mortal Kombat 11 and Days Gone are the best-selling games. So this write-up comes from Colin Stevens over at IGN. The NPD report for April 2019 is in, and Mortal Kombat 11 and Days Gone were the month's best-selling games in the United States. The report, with analysis from Matt Piscatella, friend of the show, notes that Mortal Kombat 11 instantly became the second best-selling game of 2019 year-to-date and was the best-selling game on every platform it was released on: PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. This is the first time a third-party published game has been Nintendo Switch's best-selling title since Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle was released in 2017. Days Gone debut month sales ranked as the seventh highest in history for a Sony published game, and at the time it was since released, it has already become the best selling game developed by Sony Bend in lifetime revenue. Coming in at third place is MLB 19 The Show, which is the best selling sports game of 2019 year to date. Following this are The Division 2, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and Grand Theft Auto 5. That game just will
it
never
just will
die.
It will not stop selling, will it? That's amazing when you think about it, isn't it? It's still in the top 10 years after.
Yeah. Kingdom Hearts 3 remains the best-selling game of 2019 year-to-date, however, and the top 10 best-selling games for April are as follows. Mortal Kombat 11, number 1. Number 2, Days Gone. Number 3, MLB 19, The Show. Number 4, The Division. Number 5, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Number 6, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number 7, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice. Number 8, Call of Duty, Black Ops 4. Number 9, NBA 2K19. And number 10, Yoshi's Crafted World. Dollar sales of video game software is up 15% when compared to April 2018, while hardware spending decreased by 29%. Nintendo Switch was the best-selling hardware platform of both April 2019 and year to date. So before we get into our analysis of these numbers, we got a couple of people that wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. First up, we've got the nanobiologist. Happy Widow Wednesday, Gary and Andrea. The NPD numbers are here. And surprisingly, Days Gone is number 2 for the month of April. But still, shout out to Kingdom Hearts 3 for being number 1 for the year so far. The game was slammed by critics for being too long, repetitive, buggy, and just plain odd with the VO sometimes, but it still seemed to do really well. Is this because it is a Sony exclusive and in a Sony exclusive drought, and that any exclusive on the PlayStation can do well with how many units have been sold? I'm just speculating because NPD does not take into account product returns, like with the GameStop Guaranteed to Love It deal. But does this mean that many players are now not fully listening to critics and forming their own opinions more about games? This seems like a drum that gets banged regularly whenever a low-scored game sells well, but I thought it'd be good to bring it up again. Thanks, the nanobiologist.
What is the Guaranteed to Love It deal? Do you know how that works?
You have 48 hours to return a game to GameStop.
Okay.
So 48 hours from the time you've purchased the game, you can bring it back for a full refund minus taxes, and you get in-store credit.
That's pretty good.
For the purchase price.
Right.
Within 48 hours. You can technically open the game, play the game, return it within 48 hours, and get credit for it minus tax.
That's good. Good for GameStop. I like that.
Yeah. I think it's a great policy.
Yeah. And 48 hours is enough to know whether or not you're... I don't know. I mean, sometimes... I've had games where in the first couple of days, I'm like, eh, but then like it clicks like maybe a few days in. Mm-hmm. But I think in most cases, you know whether or not you're going to want to return it. I get that. That's cool.
I agree.
All right.
I think, you know, a solid 5 to 10 hour session with a game, like 5 hours the first day, maybe 5 hours the second day, we'll be able to, you'll know if you're like, yeah, I'm down to keep trying this, or if you're like, this is not my speed.
Yeah. So Mortal Kombat 11, not really a surprise, right? Hugely anticipated, huge franchise, yeah. Very well received. The only negative commentary I saw on Mortal Kombat 11, and there was quite a bit of it, was people didn't like the grind. They didn't like the microtransactions and the grind.
So that was a whole part of the game that I never really explored. I really did not care for the crypt in the previous Mortal Kombat, and it was one of my biggest concerns while previewing the game that they were going to bring it back, and sadly they did. However, crypt aside, there's a lot of ways to earn things in-game that don't require microtransactions. But the thing that Tim and I agreed on was that the story campaign is so incredibly well done that for us, that was worth the price of entry.
Just that alone. Yeah, okay.
But obviously, a lot of people love the PvP aspect and the online multiplayer and the towers. There's a ton of different combat towers that you can do to extend your gameplay experience. So I thought NetherRealm did a great job with the game. Do I care for the crypt? No. Would I like to see it go away? Yes.
Right.
Did it ruin the game for me? Absolutely not. So
certainly not a surprise to see it at number one. Mortal Kombat, obviously, is bigger than ever. Days Gone, I saw this story the other day that it sold a ton of copies, and it was slightly surprising because, yeah, it didn't gel with the critical reception.
But it didn't get bad scores. So this is the thing that I think is important to remember. It got... you know, like mostly 6s, 7s, and 8s. We got a couple 9s and like some outlier 10s.
But so we're clear, as far as like Sony's concerned, critically, they would not consider that a success. 6s, 7s, and 8s.
Well,
for a AAA game like that.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, most AAA games get between 7 and 8. Like, okay. An 8 is a great score for a game. Very few games get 9s and 10s. And I think that that's something we always bring up every time we talk about critical versus consumer reception on games, is that this misconception that if a game gets an 8 or a 7, that it's a bad game. And that's just not true.
No, I think I totally agree with that. I'm just saying that Days Gone seemed to me like it belonged in that kind of AAA plus category where it had been in development for a long time. It got super, super hyped. It was really, really ambitious. It seemed like it had the potential to be one of those 9 or 10. 10 out of 10 games.
It absolutely did, especially since, you know, Greg and I chatted about this after the preview event that we went to, where we got to play like 3 to 4 hours. I got closer to 4 to 5 hours with the game. And that slice that they showed us, I think, really got us excited for it to have potential to be a 9. I don't think this game was maybe ever going to be a 10 because of the style of game that it was. And those types of games, open world games like that, very rarely get 10s because they tend to be more broken or have the opportunity for more bugs than like a single player linear narrative experience, for example.
Yeah.
But that being said, we didn't understand how the mechanics within the game and how the narrative was going to play out long term. Again, like to be clear, Days Gone is not a bad game. I never said Days Gone was a bad game. I just had enough issues with it that it wasn't my favorite game. And the unfortunate part for Sony Interactive Entertainment is that they've set the bar so high. We're coming off of PlayStation Spider-Man 4 and God of War, right? And so for the next game to big tentpole game to follow to be Days Gone, I mean, they had incredibly big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
So
I think if you look at
the review aggregate score overall once all the reviews are in. Yeah, it came out like as a pretty good but not great. I was just kind of surprised because when it first dropped and the first big reviews like Polygon and, you know, Kotaku and IGN and the big sites got in there, some of those sites, I remember reading like Patrick Klepek's review, like they really put the boot in. Like they really did not like it. They were quite hostile reviews. And I remember thinking, oh shit, like this game's going to be a flop. But then overall, the reviews kind of, you know, it picked up a little bit and it came out pretty good. But again, the surprise is the reviews were great. The reviews were good but not great, but the sales are in fact great. So I wonder if a lot of people looked at the reviews and went, ah, I don't care, this looks like the kind of game I want to play anyway. Mm-hmm. And the reviews were somewhat disregarded. Because there is a discrepancy between just how tremendously well the game's been selling and the reviews, which I think, like I said, were pretty good, but not necessarily the sort of reviews that lead to like a game being super successful.
Right. I mean, in the thing I think we're also looking at is that when we're talking about exclusives, their success is always going to be tempered by the fact that they can only be bought on a single platform.
That too.
Right. And so I think it's awesome that they did as well as they did given those constraints. So, I mean, congrats to Ben for having their most successful game ever.
Yeah. I mean, look at this. Days Gone. I mean, obviously MLB The Show as well, but Days Gone was only beaten by Mortal Kombat 11, which is a huge, huge title on multiple platforms, and beat out The Division 2, which is a mm-hmm. huge, huge title on multiple platforms. So it must have done really well.
Well, The Division 2 launched in March.
Right.
So, I mean, I wasn't suspecting that they would maintain sales, and Ubisoft has already come forward to say it hasn't performed as well as they expected it to. I do think it's really interesting how far down the list Sekiro is, because I thought that game was going to do better.
That's been out for a while as well, though, right?
Well, not that long.
But didn't it come out around the same time as Division 2?
Let me double check the release date on that. Really quickly. Yes, it did. March 22nd.
Okay.
Something I also wanted to mention, we have another reader mail about NPD. This one comes from Suck Sandwich.
Hi,
Gary and Andrea. The U.S. NPD results for April are in, and not surprisingly, Mortal Kombat 11 was the best-selling game last month. What is surprising, however, is that MK11 was the best-selling game on Nintendo Switch in April, even beating out Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. This is the first time, which we already talked about, that the Switch game has topped the bestsellers list. While MK11 on Switch isn't perfect port by any means, it is a very competent one that runs just about as well as its more powerful counterparts. So many Switch ports are half-assed, and so many companies seem to pass up the console, I assume because it's seen as a lot of work with not a lot of return. However, MK11 clearly says otherwise, and Bethesda has said that they've had similar success with their Switch ports. Should developers and publishers be looking at Switch as a more viable platform for some of the bigger third-party titles, or is this a fluke? Thanks for all you do.
I mean, you could argue that Mortal Kombat 11 is a special case because it is such a massive brand and people are going to be interested in it no matter what. I do think there's a point to be made. You know, we've been saying for a while now that for indie developers, Switch has emerged as a really lucrative platform to develop on. A lot of developers have said our best sales have been on Switch, which is great. But Mortal Kombat 11, again, the huge brand name aside, you can't totally disregard that, perhaps demonstrates that, yeah, don't phone in the Switch version. There's money to be made there. I know, obviously, you don't have as much. I don't know. Have you seen Mortal Kombat 11 on the Switch? Does it look good?
I have not.
So we know it's going to be downgraded a little bit, but I imagine it still looks pretty great.
I mean, the visuals on a 4K TV on a PlayStation 4 Pro are amazing.
Yeah.
And so I would be hard-pressed to be convinced, if I had both consoles, to play Mortal Kombat on my Switch, because the input controls are so precise and you have to be very cautious of which buttons you're hitting when. It's not very forgiving in that sense.
Right.
But if all you have is a Switch, then absolutely, you know, check it out. Get Mortal Kombat, because there's so few third-party AAA offerings on the Switch as it is. If you think about it, if you're a Switch owner, most of the titles that have been released in 2019 for you have been indies. There haven't been that many AAA games that have come out this year for Switch. And the idea that it beats out Super Smash Bros. Is kind of an interesting thing to ponder, because Smash has been out for several months now.
Yeah.
Like, of course it should beat Smash, you know? Like, people, you would assume that people who have a Switch that are interested in Smash bought the game a long time ago. But what else is competing with a game the caliber of Mortal Kombat on Switch right now.
I think if you've got a Switch, the compelling reasons to own one are, you know, first and foremost, obviously the big first party titles from Nintendo. Secondly, the what has now emerged as an incredible selection of great indie titles. Mm-hmm. And then third place is like, you know, the big third party AAA ports, which are good but not great. It's nice that we have them. Again, this is the first time in a really long time that a Nintendo console has even gotten these. Remember, like in the age of the Wii and the Wii U, like they weren't even bothering to put these games on those platforms because the sales weren't there. The sales of the Switch now are good enough that they can't ignore it, and they have to put Mortal Kombat and these big games on the Switch.
I think one of the problems, though, with porting games to Switch in the era of game making that we're at the end of the life cycle for Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and the games are bigger and require more processing power than ever, and the Switch just cannot graphically handle a lot of the games that are third party that you find on PC or the other two consoles. And I think that's probably why you don't see a lot of ports, or if you do see some ports, they're typically not as good as what you would find on the other systems. I hope that, you know, we can see that change, but I don't know how it's going to be going into the next generation of consoles that are even more powerful, especially if you look at the PlayStation 5 demo that we watched yesterday on the show. Did you see that footage at all, Gary?
I saw the almost immediate loading times, which is pretty impressive. And the zipping through the streets thing that looked pretty good. So yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And so it leaves us with the question of, where does Nintendo fit into the ongoing, you know, console generation cycles? Because they're off cycle this time. They're inevitably going to be off cycle for next time. Are they just finally going to forever be on their own island saying, we're Nintendo, our focus has always been our first party titles, and that's just the way it is?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing has changed. That's always what Nintendo has been. Nintendo has always said, we are not interested in fighting the same war and playing the same game as Sony and Microsoft. Let them do the hardware dick measuring contest. You know, who's got the fastest machine? Who's got the most exclusives? Let them have that one-on-one fight. We'll just be over here doing our own thing. We have
Labo VR.
We're gonna make shit out of cardboard over here. You guys fight over there. We're gonna make some shit out of cardboard. We're gonna have the most amazing first party. I don't think anyone would argue Nintendo's got the best first party games of any platform. We have now this incredible array of indies, and you're going to get pretty decent service on the AAA ports as well, which is something that's something they weren't even able to say for the last couple of platforms. So Nintendo's just going to keep on Nintendoing and making a ton of money doing it. I don't think, you know, they've never really cared about like who's got the best hardware specs. They have something completely different, which is this amazing kind of hybrid portable desktop console. It's a totally different kind of thing. People clearly don't. I think most people don't care about, you know, as long as it isn't like hugely noticeable, if the frame rate's a little bit slower or the resolution isn't as high, most people don't care. It's good enough for most people.
Or the people that do care aren't playing it on Switch, right?
Say again?
I said, and the people that do care aren't playing it on Switch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you are the kind of person that cares about that, then you make a different choice to begin with. But for the majority of people that just like everything else that the Switch has to offer, they're more than happy. I do want to just going to go back briefly to a point that Nanobiologist said that I thought was interesting about, you know, I think there's two sides to the argument about Days Gone being a platform exclusive title. I think on the one hand, yes, that limits you because you're only selling units on one platform, not on the Xbox or PC or Switch or others. On the other hand, I do think that for people that are on those platforms, whether it's PlayStation or Xbox or Switch, if they can slap that exclusive only on PlayStation badge on it, I do think as a Sony or an whatever platform it is that you have, and that's your platform, I think you are more likely to kind of take a look at it because you like the idea that it's exclusive to you. There's still that tribalism that's there. You know, the idea that there's, you know, whether it's Spider-Man or Days Gone or God of War, something that is like, oh yeah, only we get to play this on our platform. I do think that those titles get a bit of a closer look from Sony gamers who like the idea that this isn't for everyone. It's just for them and their PlayStation club. Don't you think?
I do think that mentality exists. I just, in my head, all I hear is how recently we've just been getting people being so upset about the idea of exclusives in the Epic Game Store. And I'm like, this just is a perfect reminder that exclusives
It's always been that way.
Thank you, Gary. I feel it's like I've been saying that forever. Doesn't matter. People still mad. All right, let's move on to the next story. Ouya's Game Store closes for good next month. So this write-up comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. It's the end of the line for Ouya, the Android game console which sprung into life during the Kickstarter boom. 4 years after the final Ouya console dropped off the end of the production line, the platform's game store is also being switched off. Razer, which now owns Ouya, is binning off the Forge TV and Mad Catz Mojo game stores at the same time on June 25th. Ouya owners are being encouraged to make any final purchases and ensure all games they want to keep are downloaded. If you do still have funds in your account, you may want to
spend them.
An FAQ on the shutdown has confirmed that there will be no way of withdrawing the money otherwise. You will continue to have access to the games that have been downloaded, Razer's FAQ states, though any games which require a purchase validation upon launch will not. Contact the game developer for confirmation, Razer concludes. Released back in 2013 after raising $8.5 million via Kickstarter, the Ouya was one of the crowdfunding's highest profile success stories, with some analysts questioning whether the upstart console challenger would disrupt the console market forever, but it was not meant to be. After shipping enough consoles to fulfill its Kickstarter audience, Ouya struggled to find interest elsewhere. Within 2 years, it had burnt through a further $25 million from various investors and languished in debt. It was at this point that Razer swooped in to buy Ouya's software assets while ending hardware manufacture of the console itself. Farewell, Ouya.
Sad. It's sad in a way, isn't it?
A little bit. I remember when that Kickstarter video was released, and that's when the word disrupt was like at its peak. I know people still like to say that things disrupt certain industries, but I mean, the funny part to a lot of people that I know that worked in games industry coverage was that it essentially was providing all of the games you can get on smartphones. And I think smartphones are really what put the nail in the coffin for Ouya. Because if you think about how powerful smartphones were in 2013 compared to where they are today, I mean, if the people who made Ouya had seen where, you know, your Android and iOS operating systems were going, I mean, they probably never would have undertaken this endeavor, right?
Right. Were you ever, I mean, I'm sure you remember when the Ouya was new and the Kickstarter was all
over
the news.
Oh yeah, I have an Ouya in a closet somewhere.
So you've played it.
Oh yeah.
Were you ever optimistic about it, or did you always feel like it was probably doomed?
Oh yeah, it was definitely doomed. But I was a big iPad gamer back then. Okay. I hosted a This Week in iPad show like way, way back when.
Okay. What was that for?
It was for thisweekend.com,
okay,
which no longer exists, but you can go and try to find it if you want. This Week in iPad was the name of the show. And one of the segments that I did was we would feature an iPad game of the week.
Right.
And so I was constantly playing games on my iPad. And so like when the Ouya came out, I was just like, this doesn't make sense to me. Why you would need this little box to hook up to your TV when you can just play it on your screen on your tablet.
Right.
But I appreciated what they were doing. I thought it was cool how much money they raised.
I liked the idea of it. It was open source. So there was a new way for developers to get their games in front of you. I like the idea of something kind of disrupting the status quo. That's always interesting.
Absolutely. And that was definitely before both Unity and Unreal Engine changed their licensing policies to be, they're very much more approachable today than they were back then.
Yeah.
And so like the whole idea of it being open platform and open source was very appealing to a lot of indie devs, but clearly it was not meant to be.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just I get sentimental about this kind of. I never had an Ouya. I never really cared about it other than just kind of being interested to see how it would do. So I've got no dog in this fight. I just, whenever I see a story like this, it reminds me of when they switched off the Wii Shop not long ago. That was quite recently as well. And it had, there was a lot of YouTube live streams of like streaming the final hours of the Wii Shop with that kind of boppy little music playing.
I love that Wii music so much.
And there was almost kind of a funereal aspect to it. Like it felt, mm-hmm. When they say we're not going to make hardware anymore, okay, fine. But like when they flip that switch that turns off a service, I don't know. There's something that, and that whole thing just now then just blinks out of existence. It's gone, never to be seen again. There's something really sad. Even if it's something like the Ouya, which clearly no one ever really gave a shit about. I don't know. It's just kind of sad. I saw the story yesterday. It's like Ouya is dead. I'm like, really? Wasn't that years ago? But the service, even though they stopped making the hardware years ago, there was this vestigial tale. And I imagine there are. God knows. I'd love to talk to some of these people because I'd be fascinated to hear from them. But I imagine there are people out there who were still playing their Ouyas and are really sad about this news.
You think so?
I mean, there's got to be someone.
Sure, Gary. There's got to be someone.
Well, I mean, look, the store continued to run for 4 more years after they stopped making. Someone was using it.
I'm sure Razer was thinking they want to try to recoup some of this investment by selling software.
Right.
They were like, hey, we're not going to spend any more money on production of the hardware, but for people that already own it, why don't we still try to, you know, keep making some money by selling software?
Right.
When they essentially can just put games that are designed for mobile onto the platform.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, obviously not every mobile game has controller interfaces that are designed for, you know, that kind of an input scheme.
Yeah.
But that
it costs money to maintain these platforms, these servers, right?
Yeah.
They're not running these servers for free. I would love to know, they'll never release this, but I would love to know like what their daily usage stats were like in the final week. Like, I mean, it could be like just dozens of people, just like literally just a handful of people still hitting the site and purchasing games in the final hours.
I wonder how many Ouyas there are in the world, like what their total console sales
were. I imagine there's a lot, but I imagine they're mostly in closets like yours is.
It's true.
We've only got so many HDMI ports on the back of our TV. Something's got to give.
Ain't that the truth? And Ouya does not get a spot.
No, it does not.
All right.
Farewell, Ouya.
Goodbye, Ouya. Go with God. All right, next story. World War Z Studio wanted to do a remake of Half-Life 2. This write-up comes from Adam Bankhurst over at IGN. Saber Interactive, the developer behind World War Z, approached Valve with the possibility of having it remake Half-Life 2. However, Valve responded that if a remake does happen, it will be done internally. Game Watcher spoke to Saber Interactive CEO and co-founder Matthew Karch, who discussed that after Saber worked on Halo, the Master Chief Collection, the team then turned its eyes to Half-Life 2. Quote, after we did Halo Anniversary and Halo 2 Anniversary as part of the Master Chief Collection, I reached out to Gabe Newell personally because I knew him from a past life, and I said, I want to remake Half-Life 2, Karch said. That's all I want to do. I won't charge you anything for it. I'll do it for rev share, and it doesn't even need to be a big rev share. I just really want to do it because I love that game so much. Valve, unfortunately for Saber, responded by saying, sorry, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it internally. Karch, like many of us, continued to ask the question, where's Half-Life? He believes Saber is scratching that itch with World War Z on the Left 4 Dead side, but Gordon Freeman, man, he's as iconic as Master Chief. Where is it? While we still don't know when or if Half-Life will ever return, we do know that World War Z does a good job of recreating the chaotic zombie-filled fun of Left 4 Dead. And then they talk about some details from their review, which if you guys are interested, of course, you can go on over to their site and check out. I've heard good things about World War Z, but...
Yeah, I've got a copy of it. I still need to play it. We should play it. Yeah, I've got it on PlayStation. We can finally play a game together.
Okay, maybe I can get Britt in on this action, too.
Okay, let's do it.
She loves zombie games.
I'm told that with three or four players, it's really, really fun, so we should try it.
Okay,
I've been trying to get Greg to play it with me, but he's flying around the world all the time.
What a jerk. He's in Florida right now doing a meetup. So what do you think about Half-Life? My theory is that say goodbye. It's never coming back.
Even in remake form?
Even in remake form, especially after this story.
Yeah.
After Valve said, hey, if they've turned down somebody saying we're not going to charge you, we'll take a really small piece of the rev share just to like recoup our costs,
yeah,
but we don't want profits from it.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, what's Valve's deal? Why not just say yes?
I love Valve and I love Gabe, but they and he frustrate me a lot because of things like this. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of gamers get frustrated. Valve is a unique case. Valve was and remains one of the true, you know, platinum, blue chip, quadruple A game developers out there. One of the greatest game makers of all time, up there with you know Blizzard and just the best of the best. But then they came up with another way to make money, hand over fist with Steam and the store,
mm-hmm,
and they just don't need to make games anymore. So I guess they just decided. I mean, I imagine somewhere deep within Valve there is a Skunk Works game development going on. But like, when was the last game they even put out? I'm not even going to count Artifact.
Well, I wasn't counting Artifact either, but there was another story floating around today. Valve will develop its own Dota Auto Chess.
See, that's more frustrating.
Dota Auto Chess, everybody.
It's kind of like a lot of the frustration that people have with George R.R. Martin right now. It's like they just want the last two books, but George is like, what about this book? What about this TV show? What about this comic? I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Why don't you just do the things we actually want to do, which is write the last two fucking books? That's like Valve. What about this crazy card game? What about this crazy project? What about this weird VR thing? No, we just want Half-Life 3. Like, how much clearer can we make it? We want Half-Life 3.
Or Portal.
Yeah, tell Gary. Fucking tell him.
I don't think, and here's the thing. I'll I'll make a prediction right now, and I'll be happy to be proved wrong. I predicted years ago that Tiger Woods would never win another major, and I was happy to be proved wrong because that was amazing. I'd love to be proved wrong on this. I'll make the prediction now, though. By all means, prove me wrong. Please do it. You'll never see Half-Life 3. It'll just never happen. You agree?
You cowards, prove him wrong.
Do you agree that it'll just never happen?
Oh, no, I'm with you. I mean, I can't tell you how many news stories over the course of my career reporting on video games I've done about Half-Life 3 rumors. I've seen so many over so many years from so many sources that I'm just like, nah, it's not going to happen. Right. I'm with you, though. I would like to be proved wrong. I would love to see Valve get back into making games. Selfishly, because I want Portal 3.
Oh my god! I mean, I want all the threes. Right? I want Half-Life 3, Left 4 Dead 3,
and Portal 3.
I want a new orange. I can imagine if they did an Orange Box 2.
How amazing!
How amazing would that be?
that would instantly be
the biggest news story of the decade. Orange Box 2.
Oh, I think that
Team Fortress 3. I want that. I want all of these.
It's sad, honestly. It's,
what are they doing over there?
Rolling around in their pile of
Scrooge
money.
McDuck. Yeah. In all this fucking money, mm-hmm. they don't need to. To be fair, here's the thing. Let me ask you this question. Right. If you had $1 billion in your bank account tomorrow, would you work another day in your life?
Yes, absolutely.
You would still feel the need to work?
Of course.
You wouldn't just go sit on a beach?
I would do that for a little while, right?
But you would eventually feel the need to
absolutely.
Make something?
Well, we just talked about we just did a video for What's Good, where we had a topic of which books you would make into video games. And I said, if I won the lottery, I would open a studio or I would pay a studio to make a video game on the Mistborn series.
Okay.
So like, Gary, give me $1 billion and I will make a video game.
You'd be like Howard Hughes, and this is a great story about Howard Hughes. His favorite, he had this favorite ice cream flavor that he liked. And then and he would have it shipped to his mansion. I can't remember what the flavor was or the manufacturer. There's a famous story about Howard Hughes.
I
think it was like a banana pecan, like a weird flavor.
Like a weird
it sounds
flavor.
Good, right?
Yeah.
And they stopped making it. But he loved the ice cream so much, he bought the ice cream company and told him to resume making it just so that he could have his favorite flavor.
See?
That's the kind of thing when you're super rich that you can do.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm the same. If I was put in charge, whether or not I'm in charge of anything, I'll just tell you what I want. We're never going to get Half-Life 3. I would love it, but we're never going to get it. And here's the thing. It's taken on such mythic status now that unless they absolutely created like the greatest 11 out of 10 game of all time, at this point, they cannot possibly meet expectations, which maybe is the reason why they're not doing it. But I would kill for just the next best thing is maybe this, like a really great, all singing, all dancing, 4K, 60 frame per second, Half-Life 2 Ultra remake. Maybe throw in Half-Life 1 as well, put them both together.
I mean, why not?
I don't know if you've ever played like Black Mesa or stuff like that, but some of the fan remakes of Half-Life 1 are actually pretty good. Half-Life 2, and Half-Life 2 is one of my all-time favorite games. It's one of the few games that I will go back and I'll still play it again today. And it still feels fresh. It still feels amazing. Obviously, graphically, it's showing its age, but it's still an amazing game. It's such a terrific candidate for
Orange Box Remaster?
For some kind of remaster. Mm. If it was any other company that wasn't swimming in money like Valve, you probably would have seen it by now. Because here's the other thing. You would sell a lot. You would make a lot of money on Half-Life 2. But for Valve, it's a drop in the bucket at this point. They're making so much money that they just don't really need to make games anymore. I mean, prove me wrong. They're not making games anymore. I just don't know what they're doing over there. What are all the people
at Valve
doing?
I mean, they're supporting Dota, right? So that's
important.
That's important to remind people of. But like, in the idea that they're only doing game development around Dota is frustrating for people like me who never were attracted to Dota as a game. And it's just, it's like I said, it's a head scratcher. I don't understand why. Maybe Epic Game Store is just going to come in and have to eat their lunch so hard that they're like, oh, shit.
Sure, we're going to go back to making games.
We better go get back to making games.
Here's the thing.
I don't know.
If you ask my prediction, they clearly, I believe strongly there are people, teams inside Valve right now working on games, whether that's the next Half-Life or the next three, the version three of whatever the franchise we just talked about or something totally new. There are people in there making games. But because they have infinite money, They have the infinite money cheat code that they typed in a few years ago.
Yeah.
They don't need to. They don't need. Here's another. They don't need to make the games. It's they don't need to put games out, and they certainly don't need to rush them. There's no crunch. There's no deadline. Nothing's announced. They'll work on things. If it doesn't meet their standards, they'll scrap it, or they'll start over, and they'll just get. And it'll something will come when it's ready. So they have a very privileged position over at Valve to develop games completely on their own terms. And I think they are perfectionists over there. They're like Pixar. They'll get halfway through a movie, and if they're not happy with it, they'll just scrap it and start over. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what they're doing over there. The next big game, and I'm not counting Artifact, the next big game you see from Valve will probably be really great, because it'll only be when they're confident that it's worthy of their brand that they will put something out. But in the meantime, we just all have to wait.
Kevin, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, making a game is a risk. Like, regardless if it's a widely anticipated game, at the end of the day, you have to put a lot of money in it, and you're not sure of the returns. And I
are
think
you giving
that,
like, them an out, Kevin?
No, I'm just saying, like, this is a company. Like, it's much easier to build a platform where other people can sell their games and they can just get a cut from it, right? Like,
well, obviously.
So I feel like that's why they're not making games anymore.
I mean,
that's exactly
why, right? But and it's just...
But I don't think Valve has to worry. Valve doesn't have to worry. Ooh, making games are expensive. Again, they've got no shortage of money, and they're it's pretty likely that any game they do put out is going to be a financial success, because, like, it's Valve, and it's probably going to be really good.
And they have their own proprietary platform. But they could make it a Steam exclusive store, Steam exclusive game.
That's not how, like, businesses work. It's not like, oh, you have as much money. Like, go ahead and invest in this if it's strategically more financially, like, viable to not make a game and know that you're going to have X amount of money coming in. You know, I feel like
I think you don't understand how money gets spent in game dev. Because people take those risks all the time. Even take a look at Epic.
But that's
Epic was making money hand over fist with Unreal Engine before Fortnite was even a game, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Before Fortnite happened, they had absolutely no reason to publish another game, right? Because they hadn't forever. You know, like back in the Unreal Tournament days. I mean, so Epic
yeah,
took
Unreal
a long,
Engine is basically Epic's Steam store.
Break.
It's their big,
yeah,
their
but
big
like,
revenue
Paragon
store.
Was like their first big thing back into video game development that was actually like a really robust title for them until they canceled it. But then Fortnite happened, and now they're making quadruple, if not, you know, 5x the money they were making just from Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely understand your point, and you're right that, like, they have no motivation. And I think that's just what we're saying, is that they have no reason to do it. But I think Gary's point is, but when you have all that money, why not? Why not give something? Why not take a chance? Because, like, it's not going to really hurt your bottom line that much. They could drop just a couple of million into R&D to start, like, the concept art process, and they would make that money back in a week on Steam, you know?
I mean, maybe, right? Like, isn't that the thing? That, like, they're not... It's not
Kevin,
like
be on our side.
It is a weird situation, and I'd love to get inside Gabe's head on it. There's two arguments. One is, yeah, they don't ever need to work a day in their life again, other than to maintain the Steam store, because they make so much money. On the one hand, that company was formed by people who love games and want to make games. And you don't stop loving games and wanting to make games just because you don't need to anymore.
True.
And they are sitting, again, it's a weird thing to think about. They're sitting on two or three or four of the biggest, most valuable IP in games. Portal, Left 4 Dead, Team Fortress, and Half-Life are four of the biggest names in games. And any one of those, the next iteration, would be another license to print money for them. I think they're more concerned about the reputational risk. They don't want to put out anything that isn't considered, oh my God, the next fantastic, amazing game from Valve.
Oh yeah, the bar would be incredibly high.
Yeah.
All right, one more thing, Kevin, then I got to move on.
Okay, I know, I was just going to say, like, yeah, it was formed by a bunch of people that like making games, but, like, how many of those people are still there, and, like, how much bigger is it now?
Gabe is still there.
From what I understand, there's still quite a few of those people there. But,
like, aren't there a lot of more people that are now, like,
working on Vive and other things?
Exactly.
So, yeah, of course. Portal VR. Make it happen. All right, here we go. Mario Kart Tour Beta locks powerful rare characters behind the paywall. This comes from Liz Lanier over at Variety Gaming. Mario Kart Tour seems poised to have several monetization elements, including a four-pay rare characters based on leaked info from its current beta period in Japan, as shared on Reset Era. The mobile game will be free to play, so of course Nintendo needs to make money from Mario Kart Tour somehow. Still, some fans are concerned about the amount of microtransactions the game will have upon its full release. Those screenshots and the like are not meant to be shared during the closed beta. Some users have taken to Twitter. Most can be found by searching this Japanese username, and you have to go over to Variety to get that, or just head to the Reset Era thread. Beta is not a full picture, and it says on the website for the game that in-game purchases are not available during the beta test, so even those currently playing can't have a full grasp on how invasive the microtransactions will be for the game. He pointed out that there are multiple multi-level gacha for driver.
What is gacha? Do you know what that is?
We should Google that. It's a Japanese word. For drivers, carts, and gliders. Oh, wait. Meaning the players need to spend virtual currency to unlock these in-game elements. The thing about virtual currency is that it can be usually earned in-game, but it can also be unlocked by spending real-world dollars. The other option was for Nintendo to release the game at a one-time cost rather than the free-to-play with microtransactions model, but that seems to be happening less and less as it limits the potential for publishers to make more and more revenue from a single game. Fortnite, Brawl Stars, and other top mobile games follow the free-to-play model with great success. As for the game itself, beyond monetization, initial impressions of screenshots and the like are being shared around. It looks like classic Mario Kart in portrait mode with a gameplay a bit more simplified. The racer reportedly just drives automatically and players have to steer by pulling to the left or to the right. The expected characters are present: Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser, Toad, Yoshi, and others. And some characters like Luigi are classified as rare and behind a virtual paywall.
Okay.
I was anticipating that this could potentially be the big hit for Nintendo on mobile, since their previous modal titles were good and they did pretty well, but
I thought Super Mario Run was very good.
You did?
Yes, I thought as it is as good as an implementation of Mario on mobile you're going to get.
Oh, I just disagree fundamentally.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
I wanted a jumping ability in a Mario game.
You could jump. That was the one thing you could do, is jump.
Right, but like more control. The way that the game played, it felt more like a side-scrolling runner.
Yeah, it was like an endless runner.
Right, than a Mario game.
Right.
Where you can, you know, very strategically jump because it's platforming, right?
Yeah.
But, and so I didn't really care for it in that sense.
Yeah.
I remember when Super Mario Run and Sonic Jump kind of released at the same time, the running gag was, oh, they just swapped their abilities, because Sonic was more of a jumping focus game and Mario was more of a runner.
Right.
And they were like, well, Sonic should have been the runner and Mario should have had more jumping puzzles. So not to say, again, like, it's all relative, right? But if you think about the mobile gaming market, I mean, both of their biggest titles, I mean, with the exception of Fire Emblem, which is still great and still doing gangbusters for them, both of those titles, what's the other one I'm thinking of? Oh, Animal Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
They like lit the world on fire when they released, and then they fizzled very quickly as far as like worldwide engagement goes. When you look at the mobile market, you compare it to some of the people that have been on the leaderboards for years, you know, your Candy Crushes of the worlds, for example. I was hoping that Mario World Kart World Tour was going to be like the big thing that kind of really got people excited about Nintendo mobile games.
Yeah.
But based off what I've seen so far, I would need to play it myself, but having there be an automatic gas, I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the same as the automatic running in Mario Run, right?
Yeah.
All you do in Mario Run is jump, and all you do in Mario Kart Tour, it appears, is steer.
Yeah, so essentially it's on rails for a Mario Kart game that's very non-traditional.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see why they've gone to this model. As I recall, Nintendo said that Mario Run, which had that very basic revenue model of you essentially get the demo version for free, and then you make a one-time fee of $10, and you get and you get the whole game, and that's basically it. They never ask you for money again. I like that model. Nintendo, I think, came out and said that they didn't make as much money on Mario Run as they wanted to. So it's not surprising to me that they're not copying that model again. They're trying something else. I personally don't have a problem in principle with microtransactions. It all comes down to how you implement them.
Right.
At this point, I think there's a whole school. We're learning this. It's brand new. It's a whole new area of game design that we're learning, is how can you monetize your game to maximum effectiveness while not exploiting or annoying players? And you're trying to find that sweet spot right in the middle where you make as much money as possible, but you don't aggravate or exploit players or do anything dangerous that could, you know, that, that could get you in trouble with, you know, the same way that EA and other people have failed at this in the past. So we're learning every time. I think we're going to find that that microtransaction sweet spot. I do wonder if Nintendo's philosophy of just taking their classic games like Animal Crossing, like Super Mario and like Mario Kart, and just putting slimmed down versions on them on mobile is the right approach. Maybe they just need to bite the bullet and do like some bullshit Mario Match 3 emoji game.
Dude, I would be all over that.
I think they have too much integrity for that, but that's that. They would probably make more money doing that.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's certainly a lot to be said about, you know, microtransactions. We don't need to rehash this, especially since we're like very close to being out of time. But I think it's interesting. If you guys want to take a look, the leaked beta footage is everywhere. I'm going to personally try this myself and see how the microtransactions are once it releases here in the U.S. Kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong if you guys have a release date in the U.S. for Mario Kart Tour. I don't think we do, but let me know. And then one last thing before we end and quickly run through the rest of the show. I put some required reading on here, and because I thought it was a really important statement by Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox. I'm not going to read everything I put into the doc here because there's just not time, but at XboxP3 is his Twitter handle, or I believe it's on the blogs.microsoft.com, but essentially he wrote a very great post called Video Games, a Unifying Force for the World. Essentially, he says, I believe in two fundamental truths about gaming. First, gaming is for everyone. Second, gaming must promote and protect the safety of all. And it talks about his commitment to inclusivity and safety in the Xbox ecosystem. He talks about the 2.6 billion person strong community of gamers around the world and how it's comprised of kids and parents and teenagers and adults and elderly, and how, you know, the idea of who a gamer is has changed and includes everybody. And it's a really great thing. And then he explicitly details what Xbox is going to do to make their communities a safer and more inclusive place. And I thought it was a really fantastic blog post. So at XboxP3, again, if you want to check out Phil Spencer's statement on gaming on the Xbox platforms. All right. But I was going to do some kind of fun segue here, but now I got to rush through everything. So, Gary, if I wanted to know what was coming to the Mom and Grab digital shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
Out today. Wait, I got to do some sponsor reads first.
Oh, okay.
This episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Quip. It's time for spring cleaning, and Quip's got an easy way to start with your brushing habits. Just 2 minutes twice a day can help pave the way to a healthier mouth and mind, and now the whole family can get refreshed with Quip. The new Kids Quip has the same 2-minute timer and guiding pulses as our original version, with no childish gimmicks, so they can brush just like a grown-up. The new brush is the same as our original version, just tweaked for size-down mouths. Kids are inspired to brush better and more often with oral care that looks and feels like the products the adults in their life use, and they're proud to use Quip. Help them develop a grown-up routine without childish gimmicks. A kid-friendly features like a small brush head, watermelon anti-cavity toothpaste, and rubber grip handles and colors the little ones will love. Up to 90% of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes or don't clean evenly. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, and a friendly reminder when it's time to refresh and stay committed to your oral health. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, and they're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, and they have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. You know that Greg loves his Quip, and I love my Quip, because we talk about traveling with our Quips all the time, and in fact, Greg has his in Florida right now. Join over 1 million happy, healthy mouths. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/games, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/games. Also, this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Third Love. Third Love is making amazing bras that Gia, Jen, and all the Kinda Honeys are wearing on a daily basis, and they've got the perfect bra for you. Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and premium feel. Find your fit with Third Love's online Fit Finder, order, and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Use the Fit Finder quiz by answering just a few simple questions to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Over 12 million women have taken the quiz to date. It's actually pretty fun, and it takes less than a minute to complete. Third Love offers more than 70 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes, and it helps you identify your breast size and shape and find styles that fit your body. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find your perfect fit, and they're available every day via text, chat, or phone. Plus, returns and exchanges are free and easy. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today. Out today, speaking of today, we've got Splitgate Arena Warfare on PC, The Last Door Collector's Edition on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch, Gunlord X on Switch, Gladia Bots on PC, Mechanic Miner on PC, Plague of Day is on PC, First Day on PC, Caliper 2 on PC, and Biotope on PC and Mac. I actually don't have any new dates or deals of the day, so if you've got one, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. And I think we've got time for just a single question in reader mail. Which one of these is speaking to you, Gary?
I'm looking at there's a THQ one. Is it just these two?
There should be three. There's one on the last page.
There's a third one on the back. Let's see. What's up, guys? What do you like?
How about, well, if you don't want to do the one directed at you, we can do the second one.
Let's do the second one.
All right. From DJ Brad Schill. What's good, guys? I ran across this article claiming that THQ Nordic has close to 50 unannounced games in their development pipeline and just 80 games in development overall. That is a fuckle ton of games to have in development at once, is it not? I'm totally expecting that most of these have to be smaller titles and possible remasters with all of the IP that they have bought in the past months, but it still seems excessive. Do you guys think this developmental shotgun approach could be successful for THQ Nordic in a critical sense, or that simply these games are destined to be mid-tier, smaller-scale games? Will this approach be financially successful also? Nostalgia will only take you so far unless it's done well. Example being the Crash remasters. I'm really hoping that I'm wrong, that we will get some really dope stuff from THQ Nordic in the future. Thanks, DJ Brad Chill.
I mean, it's almost become like a running gag on the show now, hasn't it, THQ Nordic?
It is. So, interesting story. I can't tell you about the games that I played at the THQ Nordic event that I went to at Judges Week. But I can tell you that I spoke to one of the members of THQ Nordic, and we were having a little joke about how many titles they've been acquiring over the last several months. And he said, yeah, it's close to 200 IPs now.
Damn.
Close to 200 IPs that they have acquired. That is bananas. That's an incredible amount of intellectual property for one company to own.
Yes, it's insane.
And like the idea that they have 50 games in development.
How are they? Do we know where their money comes from? Do they have like a rich, like a billionaire guy that's just funding all this or something? Because this, I mean, it's, you think about what they must be spending to acquire all this IP and to develop all these games.
Yeah. That's a great question. So back in February of this year, over at gamesindustry.biz, there was a story called THQ Nordic raises $225 million for further acquisitions. Now, $225 million, a lot of money. When you have 50 unannounced games in development, though, $225 million.
Spread a little thin,
probably.
Yeah.
But this says just for further acquisitions. This doesn't specifically reference game development. It's important to remember that they have been around for a while. It's just been in the last really 6 to 12 months that we've been seeing tons of stories about them acquiring new stuff. So it's hard to know like how many of these games have been in development and for how long.
But some of this, again, I know you can't talk about it, but some of this stuff is actually on the horizon because you played some of these games.
Correct.
So we are, this is, at some point, we're going to stop talking about how they're developing so many games and actually have to see some of these games. And there is like a first wave of new titles coming.
Yes.
Okay. Danny O'Dwyer had a funny tweet earlier today where it was two pictures. One was the headline of, you know, THQ Nordic now has 50 games in development. And the other one was a screenshot of Katamari Damacy, of like a planet-sized Katamari, where it just basically collected everything you can possibly collect. It was now the Katamari is now the size of planet Earth, because that's essentially what THQ Nordic is becoming, just this massive Katamari just rolling around and picking up everything it encounters.
Yeah, there was also a story on Gama Sutra from last summer, last June, where they raised $168 million for future acquisitions. So just between those two stories, and that's not me digging very deep, that's, you know, close to $400 million in money raised for acquisitions. I also would be curious who these investors are, because are they going to get a return on their money? Don't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, do you really think that all 50 of these games are going to see the light of day?
Oh, absolutely not. Definitely not. If we have any indication of how game development works, like, there's no way that all 50 of these are going to make it to the finish line.
Yeah.
Like, and if they do, like, I will eat my words and be like, wow, I am very impressed. THQ Nordic, good job. But I mean, it just, there's, even if, let's say, let's go down this hypothetical road where all 50 of these unannounced games are going to be released, there's definitely no way that all of them are going to be financially solvent. There's no way all 50 of them make their money back. That just will not happen.
They must have some kind of business model that allows for a certain amount of, you know, some of these games aren't going to make it. Some of these games aren't going to make, even if they do, won't make their money back. Again, the economics of how they're juggling their resources is fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that it's a little bit of a head scratcher, but, you know, I guess we'll wait and see. E3's around the corner. Maybe we'll see a big announcement from them. Like we've said, they've acquired several IPs, you know, over the last year or so, and so maybe they'll debut something on like the Xbox stage or something.
Maybe it's just totally insane. Maybe it is what it looks like, just total insanity. I mean, if tomorrow or next week or next month or next year you saw a story pop up that says THQ Nordic collapses, goes into administration because what they were doing was fucking insane, would you be all that surprised?
No,
I wouldn't be.
No, definitely not. But it's important to note there was a story that came out today over at gamesindustry.biz. Metro Exodus recoups all costs, boosts Q1 revenue at THQ Nordic. So it says...
So they are making some money.
Yeah, apparently. But I thought that Deep Silver was the publisher of Metro Exodus.
No, but if in doubt, it's THQ Nordic.
Yeah, it says Metro Exodus boosted THQ Nordic's revenue in the first quarter, with the publisher confirming that 4A Games Shooter has recouped all of its production and marketing costs.
It's crazy.
In the three-month period ended March 31st, 2019, the THQ Nordic group earned the equivalent of roughly 151 million euros in revenue, up 158% over the same quarter last year. Its operational EBIT for the period was whatever, I don't know what that currency is. It's close to 37 million, a 217% year-on-year increase.
I just hope they've got a really good, you know, whoever their chief operating officer, whoever it is, it's the job it is to make sure that the books balance at the end of the day, and they're not doing something that's totally, totally unsustainable. I hope that's true, because I want to, you know, I always want to believe that whatever anyone's doing will be successful. I wanted to believe in the Ouya, like we were saying earlier in the show. I want to believe that THQ Nordic knows what they're doing and we're going to see a bunch of great games. But on the even to a layman, from the outside, it just sounds crazy.
Yeah.
200 IP.
I'm with you. I think it sounds crazy as well. I'm trying to look up this pause on this site. It's mad at me because I have an ad blocker on.
Why do they do that?
It's like, turn your ad blocker off. And by the way, I do whitelist for sites that I support. All right, here we go. Metro Exodus sales have been pretty darn good. It's become the largest game launch so far in the history of the THQ Nordic group. Recent releases, extended financial report. I guess, is Deep Silver underneath THQ Nordic? Did I not know that happened?
I think maybe they are, yeah. But there a story about them acquiring them a while ago?
Well, wouldn't be surprised. They're buying everything. Yeah. All right, well, let's get to Squad Up. This week's squad up is, this week, I should say today's, is Elliot. He's playing on Xbox One. He says, I am looking to squad up for Apex Legends and Overwatch. Overwatch, I am gold plat ranked and need a good high tier squad that can run together. Apex, I have won 30 matches solo queue, but it gets frustrating to play with randoms off mic. Looking for some skilled players. Elliot's Xbox One gamer tag is RelSelly66.
RelSelly66.
Of course, it will be in the show notes for you guys if you want to play some Overwatch or some Apex with Elliot. All right, Gary.
Yes.
This is the time of the show where we go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and we check out what we've screwed up.
Okay.
Let me see what we've screwed up today, Gary.
I don't know if we screwed anything up, but I think there were a couple of things that we didn't know that maybe people have helped us out on. Let's find out.
Let's find out indeed. Let me just format this real quick. I didn't delete the ones from yesterday. That's what happens when Greg is gone. All right. Oh, nanobiologist, thank you for putting the kind of funny meet and greet details in. Again, 7 to 10 p.m. tonight at the Deadly Sins Brew. All right. I'm looking through these here. Okay. The nanobiologist says the guaranteed to love a deal is only applicable to Days Gone and you get an in-store credit for it. Just a clarification. The guaranteed to love a deal is only applicable
one
to
game?
One title? That can't be right.
They brought in a special deal just for one title? That doesn't sound right.
I think it doesn't move around.
And it says it's the guaranteed to love it was also 48 hours from the launch of the game, not from purchase, and only ran for 3 days post-launch.
Oh, well, that's nowhere near as good as I thought it was.
That sounds wrong.
I knew it was too good to be true. I knew GameStop would never do anything that good.
So somebody else says the guaranteed to love deal is only on select games from Game Jumper X and says that it is 48 hours from release, not 48 hours from purchase. That's a very important distinction
to make. So it's only if you buy
it
like right at launch.
Right.
I knew it was too good to be true. I knew GameStop would never do anything that
That's
good.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
I was
not
just,
terrible.
I was waiting for the other shoe to drop on that one.
It's better than what it was.
I mean,
many other stores don't give you the opportunity to return it once you've purchased it.
I don't know. That just seems like a barely trying.
I mean, sure. You could. I agree that it's not ideal.
Andrea, fuck them. I hate them. They're the worst.
Wow. 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 How dare you?
Wow.
Okay. Let's see here. The nanobiologist says Ouya shipped only 58,000 consoles, and the most popular game, Towerfall Ascension, sold about 7,000 copies.
Wow.
Yikes!
Those are not good numbers. The most popular game on Ouya sold 7,000 copies?
Oh, but then Kebabs comes in and says the Ouya sold about 1 million units as of May 2013. Just under a year after release.
Okay.
So those are wildly different numbers.
I don't know who to believe there.
Well, those are both regular contributors, so...
It must have been more than 58,000.
The nanobiologist, the flavor Howard Hughes bought Baskin-Robbins over was banana nut.
Oh, I was close. I said big banana pecan. I was close.
Yeah, well,
technically
also,
pecan is a nut.
I read in there that he ordered like 350... gallons of
it. Used to buy in huge amounts,
but then like when it arrived it took a while to arrive, and when it came he was like didn't like it, like he was on to newer flavors.
Okay.
Also important from the nanobiologist, Valve bought Campo Santo, who is making the In the Valley of the Gods.
Yeah, that's right, because Sean Vanneman works up there now.
Technically a Valve game.
Yeah, there's
published
an acquisition from Campo Santo. That's right. But come on, again, that's not what I mean. I shouldn't say that's not what we want. Of course, I want a new game from Campo Santo, but what we really want are those core Valve properties.
It's just not worth it.
We want all the threes.
Jambus92 says Gasha is short for Gashapon, which refers to a random drop capsule by toy machines in Japan.
Okay, good. All See, right. I learned something there.
Kebab says Sonic Run is actually called Sonic Dash. It was the first game in the sub-series released in early 2013. The one competing with Mario Run was 2015 Sonic Runners, featuring the same gameplay as Sonic Dash, but from Sidon. All right, thank you.
I don't like it, Andrea.
You don't like it?
No. Get out of here, Sonic. Get out of here!
I know, I didn't like it either.
Although, well, I guess not.
Sorry, I'm still looking through these. There's a lot of things. Deal of the day from Mizuki. Guacamelee 1 and Grid 2 are free on Steam right now. Sims 4 is also free on Origin for PC.
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday. You can get The Sims 4 for free.
Well, I was excited somewhere.
Yeah.
Why, thank you. Also, Giant Robot Gaming says deals of the day: the brand new PSVR Moss and Astro Boy bundle is currently Astro Bot, I believe he means, bundle is currently on sale on Google Express for $179. Oh, that is a good deal for the PSVR headset and those two games. Those two $179. Yeah,
that's good.
Google Express, everybody.
That's really cheap.
All right. There's definitely, so Lord of Pounce says THQ Nordic owns Deep Silver. Thank you. We did do this that eventually, but I appreciate the confirmation. And it says Lord of Pound clarification, THQ Nordic owns Koch Media, which owns Deep Silver, for even more clarification. Okay. All right. So, the 58,000 Ouya sales were just from the Kickstarter.
Okay. Got it. That makes more sense.
Okay, got it. All right, and that is going to be it for the show. Don't forget, Tim and Greg are in Florida tonight from 7 to 10 p.m. Go say hi to them if you are in the Winter Park, Florida area. Details, again, at Game Over Greggy on Twitter is the easiest way. I believe the details are also posted in the Kind of Funny Facebook group. And I will be back tomorrow with Fran, and then... Frandria on Thursday, and then it's Fran, and then Snowbike Mike is back.
Woo!
On Friday.
Oh my God,
lots of fun. Don't forget to participate at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. We love you guys. Goodbye.